better strap yourself in. It's time for the Howie Carr Show.
Call it operational security, call it secret, but by any definition, the president's visit to Afghanistan was a very welcome surprise for some of the many American troops stationed abroad this Thanksgiving holiday.
We thank God for your health and all of the things that you've done. You are very special people, and you don't even know how much the people of our country love and respect you. And they do. That's why I'm here. I'm just bringing the message.
Live from the Matthews Brothers Studios.
This mission comes amid controversy at the Pentagon after the president intervened on behalf of a Navy SEAL at the center of a war crimes case.
You're a bigger buzzkill than Buzz Killington.
Today's surprise comes as the president faces blistering criticism from his fired Navy Secretary, Richard Spencer, who condemned as shocking and unprecedented the president's order that Eddie Gallagher retire with his Navy SEAL status, despite a conviction.
Who's your captain? Howie Carr.
CNN's new polling finds that 50% of Americans say the president should be impeached and removed from office. However, that number is the same as in October before those public hearings began.
Democrats would have been much happier if those numbers had moved up 5 or 10 points. But I would also caution the average person is gearing up for Thanksgiving, looking ahead to Christmas.
You just don't want to admit that you're wrong.
Unchained and unstoppable.
Today, the founder of BET and RLJ Companies spoke to our own Hadley Gamble.
When you take a look at what President Trump has done in the last several months, particularly the conversations surrounding the U.S.-China trade spat, is this his to lose?
I think the president has always been in a position where it's his to lose.
Rump swabs, hacks, and moon bats beware. It's Howie Carr.
Wow, what a crew they have out there talking about everything that the president does. Is there can't be anything that he does right. But then again, if you aren't doing anything on behalf of the people, what else would you talk about? Hi, I'm Bristol County Sheriff Tom Hodgson filling in for Howie Carr. And hope everybody out there had a great Thanksgiving. Lots going on in the news. My Thanksgiving actually was pretty good. Actually, it was a little different than it was last year, I suppose, in some respects, a disappointment. Nobody showed up with banners and signs to protest immigration and the separation of families and so forth as they did last year at my home. And I actually texted a friend down in Washington who's very much involved in the immigration issue and said, look, didn't have any protesters this year. They must have heard about my cooking. And okay, but I did tell them that I did, however, last year tell them that your cooking was far better than mine, and perhaps they'd do better going to that individual's home. So, Tom, I hope they had a good Thanksgiving at your house, and they certainly didn't at mine. So, anyhow, I hope you all had a great Thanksgiving. Lots going on tomorrow at the State House. Excuse me, on Monday at the State House. There's going to be several bills filed on the immigration issue. The issue that obviously is foremost in the minds of most of the people in Massachusetts and across the country is the sanctuary bill designation for the state that they're trying to push through. I think that's Eldridge's bill and a few of these other left-wing representatives and senators we have up there at Beacon Hill. And it was interesting because I was just in Greenfield, Massachusetts, a couple of weeks ago where they were trying to designate Greenfield as a sanctuary city. And it had been passed by the city council there, then vetoed by the governor, excuse me, the mayor, and then overridden again by the city council. I was asked to go speak there and brief people on the impacts of sanctuary cities. And as somebody who's been working on immigration reform for 22 years, I had a really good history and sense of how things have evolved and wanted them to know before they took their vote as citizens there that at least understand what the impacts are going to be on their public safety. Needless to say, when I arrived, there was about 100 protesters there. They came into the meeting. And as they so often do today, they don't want the people of the communities to have an opportunity to get the legitimate information that they need because they have a sort of monolithic view of all of this. And as a result, it wasn't within probably 30 seconds I started to speak. They started yelling out that I was a racist, started interrupting the meeting, pulling the shades up in the back of the room. And as many times as I had asked them not to do it, they continued just to yell out throughout and deny the people that were there the opportunity to be heard. After about 2 hours, when I was leaving, of course, I was approached by some of these Antifa types who basically were jumping in my face, saying things that I can't repeat on the air, but just very, very aggressive. And some of the elderly women that were there on the way out were chest bumped by these protesters, and they were just real thugs. And I think that we're at a point now in this country, and certainly here in Massachusetts, where lawlessness is not something that we can tolerate. We can't allow people to be intimidated from exercising their freedom of expression and freedom of speech. And that's what we're seeing. If it's gotten to a point where if you don't agree with us, those people being the obstructionists, then we're going to just shout you down. We're going to intimidate you. We're going to try to keep you from going. And I've had a number of people from Greenfield after that incident talk to me about the fact that they still were feeling very intimidated and threatened, and they've had some things happen even after the meeting for just wanting to voice an opposing view. And we just can't have that in America. 844-500-4242, 844-500-4242. That's the line to call in on, and feel free to call in and talk about whatever issues are on your mind. The other issue that's coming up, which is, should be a concern to all of us, I testified on this bill just about 2 weeks ago, was this idea of giving driver's licenses to people who are in this country illegally. And the fact that we have people here illegally who are not really afforded the privilege of getting a driver's license is not something that we should feel shameful about or that we ought not to do, because frankly, it is a privilege. And one of the things that I think most people are not aware of is when an individual is stopped by a law enforcement officer out in the street and doesn't have a driver's license, what happens is the person ultimately will get arrested. They're not supposed to be driving. They have no license. But now that they want to give these illegal immigrants driver's licenses, there will be no red flag when officers stop them because they will have a legitimate license. And the other thing that's important for people to know, in Puerto Rico, they have, I don't know the exact number of provinces, but if you live in Puerto Rico, you can go to each one of those provinces. Let's just say for the sake of discussion, there's 30 provinces. You could go to each one of those provinces once a year and get up, to each province in a year's time and get up to 3 of your original birth certificates from each one of those provinces. That's, think about the number of original birth certificates that are being sold by people in Puerto Rico. And Puerto Rico is a big problem for us. And they're selling them, and they'll say to one person, hey, look, you buy this for $500, but don't go to Massachusetts because I already sold one of these to somebody else that went to Massachusetts. And they're doing this and with the Dominican cartels. So why would we want to give anyone a driver's license who's illegally here and make it easier for them to move their drug trade around our neighborhoods to go undetected? And if there is a map that is available that actually shows how the roots of the drug cartels from the border go directly through these sanctuaries. So we're in a real challenging time right now with regards to the safety of the people of our communities, and I think it's very important for all the listeners out there to really weigh in on this issue of the idea of giving driver's licenses to people who are here illegally. It's setting all of us up for more crime and more opportunities for the drug cartels to work their way into our neighborhoods and go undetected. And
I'm curious what the argument for giving them driving licenses is. What's the benefit? What's to be had?
That's the interesting part about this, Taylor. They throw up this idea that they're going to have insurance now. So if they hit you, you'll be covered. Whereas when they when they don't have a driver's license and they're out there driving and they hit you, you don't have any insurance. You have no way to collect. The other point they make is it'll be safer. People will take, you know, they'll go to driver education because now they can have a legitimate license and they'll be able to go out on the roadway and less likely to create an accident or what have you.
That's like using a spaghetti strainer to bail out the boat.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, what's interesting about this is, first of all, where are they getting the money to buy the insurance? They come here, they don't have jobs. So how are they going to buy their insurance? And even if they get insurance for the first month, they just drop it. We know this. And these are the kinds of phony arguments that we see thrown up by legislators, not only in Massachusetts, but also in Washington. This idea that somehow our roads will be safer is just not so. Never mind the fact that the percentages are guaranteed to go up just by having more cars on the road, legal or not, right? The percentages of having more accidents with more cars is going to happen anyway. So that is a false argument. Never mind the idea that somehow because they've got the driver's license, they're going to be less likely to cause an accident. So that's really the typical bogus argument you get. It's much like the sanctuary cities, right? They say they're so embarrassed by the idea they want to have sanctuary status in these communities that they changed the name to safe cities, which is like what they did up in Greenfield, to try to make people believe that, oh, this is just by saying it's going to be safer, when in fact it really, for those of us in law enforcement who've been working on this, know that in fact, if you're going to be honest about it, it should be unsafe cities. That's the problem.
So, sure, there's a bunch more things that they can get access to just with having a driver's license as well, but we can get into those later.
Well, absolutely. Yep. Absolutely. Well, the issue, of course, for all of us right now is this idea that we're creating a special class of people who are going to be forgiven of the law. And I think that's what bothers most of the listeners out there, as well as people across this country. When you're saying, look, you American citizens and people who have come here legally, done it the right way, you need to just keep following the laws of your community. And the rest of the people who we have in our country illegally, well, they're exempted from following these rules. They're not going to be treated the same way when it comes to enforcing our laws. And I think most of us, all of us are aware of how long law enforcement's been working on, for example, Neighborhood Watch. The whole point of this is to get the people in the communities, their eyes and ears, to pay attention, tell us when somebody's doing something illegal or what have you, and report it to the police. It's how we make our community safe. But now we have people, including the mayor of Boston and Becerras, the AG in California, saying, look, you law-abiding people that are working with the police, you need to go in the shadows and be quiet. And you need to allow the people who are here in your neighborhoods illegally, you need to let them come out of the shadows and walk around your neighborhood with a protective bubble. And you need to leave them alone and don't report them. They're looking to stop us from doing our partnerships with ICE, and on and on and on. And it's a actual movement to try to make the communities less safe, to protect the people who frankly aren't abiding by our laws knowingly and coming here. Never mind the criminal illegal aliens that come here and go beyond the simple violation of the immigration law of entering the country illegally. So much more to talk about on this issue. It's probably the most important issue that's facing our communities across the nation. We're going to go to break. You're listening to Tom Hodgson, Sheriff of Bristol County, filling in for Howie Carr. We'll be back right after the break.
A nightmare to liberals everywhere. He's Howie Carr.
This is Mark in Williston, Vermont.
This is Marie in Somerville, Massachusetts.
This is Mike from South Attleboro, Mass. And this is the Howie Carr Show.
You're listening to the Howie Carr Show. This is Tom Hodgson, Sheriff Tom Hodgson, filling in for Howie Carr today. Today's poll question is brought to you by Orion Metal Exchange. It's the only precious metal company that Howie trusts. Give them a call to get a free, no-obligation investment guide about protecting your future with enduring investment in gold and silver. You've got nothing to lose and everything to gain, including peace of mind, by calling now. Call them today at 800-912-2300. And with Orion, you'll get more metal for your money. Call 800-912-2300. Taylor, what's the poll question and what are the results so far?
Did you do any Black Friday shopping today, Sheriff?
I did not. I wanted to make sure I was on time. I didn't want to hear your wrath.
90% say they did not either.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't do any. I think a lot of people are doing Cyber Monday now.
Yeah, I think that
online shopping.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the downside to that, of course, is that we don't get the nurturing of our emotions when we bump into neighbors we didn't see in the shopping places and so forth. But
can you blame people when you look at the world outside today?
Well, I hear you. Yeah, I hear you. So that's a good point. Look, we're talking earlier about the whole issue of the sanctuary state bill that's coming up to make Massachusetts a sanctuary, as well as the driver's license bill that is already been heard in committee to give illegals in this country the right to have driver's licenses. And as I was speaking about not only our state legislature, I'd be remiss if I didn't go to our congresswoman in Massachusetts, Iena Presley, who has come up with this whole idea of prison reform and talking about, since we're talking about treating people differently, she wants to end solitary confinement. She wants to allow people who are incarcerated to vote, and wants to ban, get this, this is an amazing thing to me. She wants to ban private companies from making a profit off of the jails and prisons in Massachusetts. I think, frankly, she wants to do it nationally. How outrageous is that? So the people that bid on our food services products or any of the things that we have to buy to operate our jails, who are hardworking people who own businesses, are going to have to do what? Give it for free? Let the taxpayers pick up whatever the cost, for example, associated with the phone structure that we have in our facilities? Inmates pay for phone calls right now. She wants to give free phone calls. And we charge for phone calls in the prison because we have to have an infrastructure in there that actually allows us to access databases and so forth that give us information that we need to help the local law enforcement. Whether somebody's getting ready to go to court and they're on the line, we can monitor the phone calls. It's all posted there for them to know, but they still talk. And it helps the district attorneys when somebody's about ready to go to court, perhaps on a domestic, and they end up putting the person that's going to be testifying, the witness, they're threatening them and basically trying to prevent them from testifying. So.
Live from the Matthews Brothers Studios.
Good afternoon. I'm Sheriff Tom Hodgson, filling in for Howie Carr today. 508 texts in, I bet after they get their licenses, next up is voting. And don't be surprised. It's pretty clear that that this whole movement to try to forgive people who are violating our federal law is really motivated not on the question of whether or not the law is legitimate and enforceable. It's on whether or not they can circumvent the law to get votes. They being the left-wing people who told us that they were going to represent our interests but are more interested in their own agendas as opposed to the people they promised to represent. So we've been talking about, speaking of which, Congresswoman Iena Presley, who is on this kick about, you know, giving inmates the right to vote, free phone calls, contact visits, These are people who have no clue in government. I don't know if she ever even visited a prison. But if she was really interested in the public safety concerns that we have and making sure that people are held accountable when they violate the law, sending a clear message that if you want the privileges that all of us get on the outside, then you have to conform to the law and, you know, change your behaviors. But no, because they violated the law, now it's like saying to your child that you punished for doing something very wrong and sent them to their room for 2 hours. When they start complaining, saying, well, you know what, I'm gonna put a TV in your room so you're not bored, or you have something to do. This is exactly why we're seeing this undermining of accountability in our country, and why even young kids coming up are very confused about whether or not it really matters if you do something wrong. We're going to go to Arthur. Arthur, you there?
Yes, yes, I am. And by the way, thanks for all you've done for the state. You've been a voice in the wilderness, and I for one appreciate how you've what you've done and what you've tried to do. A very tough state to get things accomplished. Well, we're at a crossroads in this country today, and one of the lucky things we got was to have President Trump get elected. But we have 1 year to get voter ID passed in the Supreme Court, and this license issue as well. If we don't get it to the Supreme Court, then this country, that's the end of our electoral system, because there are so many fraudulent things going on that defies description, and the only way to get control of it is the Supreme Court, because it's not going to happen in the Congress, and it's certainly not going to happen in the liberal states.
Well, I think you're absolutely right, Arthur. And the other piece of this is, it's clear, I think, to most of us now that Congress has been really focused on everything except the things that are important to us, and certainly our vote is probably one of the most cherished things we have. It determines our destiny in not only for us, but our future, for the future we want for our children and our grandchildren. And so this idea of them resisting the voter fraud, particularly after we've seen so much of it and it's been reported in so many different states, you have to ask yourself, why is it that the average American isn't speaking up and saying, wait a minute, you're negating my vote. You're negating my vote, and that's not okay. That's my choice of who I want, and you're trying to get more and more people in here to vote for the person you want, and I can't think of anything more egregious than denying the American people their right to select the leaders that were part of the system put forth by our forefathers. Thanks for your call, Arthur. We're going to go to Donald on the phone. Donald, you there?
Yeah, right here. Let me get Jay. Here we go. Sound a little better?
Donald?
Hello.
I'm here, Donald.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah, you got me?
Oh, I got you. Yeah, I'm just waiting to hear what you have to say.
Yeah, listen, I think one of the biggest problems we have as real Americans and the Western culture as a whole, we have given up the vocabulary to basically the communist Marxist socialism by allowing them to define themselves however they want. Example, democratic socialist. Doesn't that sound wonderful? We're going to vote to be a socialist nation. In reality, the core of socialism is the core of communism, is the core of Marxism. It is all the same goal at heart. Another example, you got people coming in from Mexico. People have forgotten the history. Trotsky, where was Trotsky run to? He ran to Mexico. There was a reason for that. He had a welcome there in his Marxist, socialist, communist philosophy.
Well, clearly, we are seeing this whole progressive movement trying to drive us towards socialism. I don't think anybody denies that. And unfortunately, some of these candidates that are running for president are proudly standing up and saying they're not saying socialism, but we know that's what their whole approach is. We don't have to go far to look through history and see where these socialist countries have failed. Why would we recreate that for ourselves, and certainly why would we set our children and our grandchildren up for such failure that we know is ultimately going to happen in this country? Paul, you're on the line. You there, Paul?
Hey, guys. How you doing today?
How you doing?
Thanks for taking my call.
Absolutely.
I'm doing fine. You know, I got you mentioned the prison system a little bit earlier, and I got to tell you, I think that we got to stop being a little, treating these prisoners a little bit better as a way to help rehabilitate them. I think the way the prison systems are running right now, you know, we just put these guys in there, we treat them like animals, and then expect them to come out and join society.
So have you been in prison? Paul, have you been in prison?
Yeah, I was married for 4 years.
Well, but
close enough, man.
but when you say treat like animals, what do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, I think just like their dignity. Like you had mentioned earlier about the phone calls. All of them are recorded. I mean, come on, you know, like,
well,
that's a little bit too far.
No, well, let me just help you with that. If you were sent to jail because you had a drug problem and you really needed help, you did something wrong, you were sent there, it was driven by you being drug addicted. You went there. If you can't get off drugs in the jail by going to a program there on substance abuse to get ready to reenter, where are you going to go? The truth of the matter is that many people don't know this, that people are pushing, they're making phone calls and setting up drug deals to come into the prisons, getting people to bring things in, doing it through vendors. They're intimidating witnesses for court that are about ready to testify against them. So these are all things that are impacting our public safety, and we're not really getting these individuals through the rehabilitative process because they're utilizing the prisons and certainly the phones to try to set these things up. So it isn't that we're trying in our prison systems to treat people poorly. We're facing the realities of what's happening in there with regards to trying to help those who want to get off drugs, not be exposed to drugs. That's why in my prison, I stopped contact visits when I first took over, because people were putting drugs in babies' diapers and bringing them into the visit room so that the person could take it.
Sir, if I may interject for a moment, I get what you're saying as far as the bad ones are concerned. But what about the good ones? Like, you know, the ones that, okay, they committed a crime, they're in prison, but they're obeying the prison rules and they're trying to rehabilitate. How does stopping visits for those people help?
Well, we don't stop the visits. They just don't get contact visits. And the reason that we do it is because we don't want, we've already seen these kinds of things ongoing. It's no different than, you know, when you and I go through the airport, right? We may be perfectly honest people who have no ill intentions whatsoever. Why should we have to go through the security checkpoint? It's an added pain for us to have to do that, and it's tough to wait in line and so forth. But the realities are there are some people who have created a situation where we don't really have a choice, because if we don't do that, those people, the small percentage that want to create harm, are going to create devastating impacts on innocent people. So we're not saying everybody in prison is doing this, but what we are saying is for those who want to focus on rehabilitation and re-enter society and be successful, because that's our job. We're not there to punish them. Our job's to set them up for rehabilitation. And so we do this because we want to make sure that we can keep it as pure as possible for them to succeed, not to fail. That's the whole purpose. So that's why I took issue with you on the idea that, you know, mistreating these people and treating them unfairly as a description of what it is in jail. And face it, you have a choice, right? There's thousands and thousands of millions of people that don't go to jail because they make different choices. So if you don't want to go to a place where you're going to have your meals dictated to you, when you have to get up, when you have to go to bed, the best thing to do is don't violate the law. Don't come to prison. And if you do, expect that it's going to be a place where we're going to want you to focus on rehabilitating yourself and leaving and never coming back with more tools in your toolbox than what you had when you came in. Thanks for calling in, Paul. The Sheriff, last guy is a bleeding heart liberal. How can you argue to treat criminals better? Come on. And this came from 603.
That's Bruce. He used to play for the Mets.
Ah, he did.
Yeah, seriously.
Wow. Well, I don't know that the individual necessarily would be bleeding heart liberal, but perhaps somebody, like many people, who don't really understand what is really happening in the prisons. And hopefully he now has a better education from somebody that's been doing this for 22 years and trying to help these people get to a better place.
978 has said, as far as the prison issue goes, the old chain gang should be brought back, minus the chains. Roads and highways should be spotless. Now, I know from covering news stories about your inmates in the past that you do a lot of good work with the inmates. Those that have good behavior, they're able to volunteer for a lot of things, right?
Oh, we do. We actually, our inmates built a handicapped accessible treehouse at the IDDI school in Assonet, which is a residential head trauma place. We do work for seniors. We refurbished for two summers, actually, Taylor, we put them on a boat and sent them out to Butler Flats Lighthouse, and they restored that historic landmark. And so, you know, they're out there in the communities getting compliments during the day while they're working from mayors, fire chiefs, police chiefs. And so we see that as very valuable. In fact, we have, as you know, I brought chain gangs to Massachusetts, where I was told that it couldn't happen. But they were not the traditional chain gangs, busting rock, that kind of thing. It was going to a higher level of security where they had to wear restraint out there because otherwise they were a higher risk to potentially flee with more time. And so, but we had plenty that volunteered. We went out and did a lot of work, painting curbing and all kinds of things. You couldn't even see the restraints, really, unless you were absolutely looking for them. But these are people that volunteered to do it. It gave them a chance that they otherwise wouldn't have had to go out and be exposed to what the pre-release inmates who don't wear restraints go out 3-4 crews a day in our county. So it really is an important important way to give the taxpayers back a return on their investment and give the inmates an opportunity to work on rehabilitation. We're going to go to break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Howie Carr. I'm Sheriff Tom Hodgson filling in for Howie Carr.
He's suave. He's debonair. He's Howie Carr.
This is Jeff in Woodstock, Connecticut.
This is Laura Benner in South Burlington, Vermont.
This is Jimmy Mack in Falmouth, Massachusetts. And this is The Howie Carr Show.
We're back. I'm Tom Hodgson filling in for Howie Carr. The call-in number is 844-500-4242. And before we went to break, we were talking about the tandem work crews and the pre-release crews that I have working in Bristol County. And interestingly enough, I've been doing it for 22 years and doing all kinds of community projects. And, of course, when Congress decided that they weren't going to give the president the money to build the wall, obviously those of us who were in government thought, well, what can we do to try to help the president, you know, make the community safer if they're not going to give them the wall and help them secure the border? And I had suggested at my last inaugural ceremony that perhaps we could use inmates to build the wall. And boy, I've never seen a reaction like I saw coming out of the people in the state house here in Massachusetts. And just most recently, we just had a bill that was filed by a representative, and he testified on saying that, you know, he felt that no inmate should ever be able to leave Massachusetts without getting the approval of, I believe, the state legislature and the governor. And the truth of the matter is it wasn't necessarily going to be us ever that would have been called down there unless the president had enough resources to be able to have us brought from this far away that the federal government have to support. But even forget the wall. How short-sighted are these elected officials saying, you know, we don't want to use the labor of inmates who volunteer to do it to do anything to improve the quality of life for our communities, including the poor people in Michigan. What about the pipes that they haven't been able to replace for clean water, for years because they don't have the money. Why wouldn't we take inmates from that region and have them go over there and lay the pipes? If it's going to make people healthier and get the project done, why would we care? The inmates feel good that they did something that was an accomplishment nationally, something that they could put on their resume, and at the same time make a difference for the people of the community and feel like they're contributing. I mean, I think that's what all of us in corrections are looking to do, is to try to find ways to get them out there to see that, yeah, everybody's not labeling you as somebody that can't leave prison. You made a mistake. You did something wrong. Okay. You work on reentry and go out there. And this is one of the ways that they could do it. But boy, I'll tell you, it's not surprising that we would see it from these obstructionists. It was not about whether or not it was good for the people, as usual in legislatures. It's more about their political position on an issue and whether or not they support the person who's recommending whatever it is they're recommending. In this case, it was Donald Trump, and we've seen that since day one when he began to take office. So it's unfortunate that we have elected officials who will say, I'm going to look to put everything through my personal political filter first to decide whether or not I want to allow the people to get the ultimate benefit. And if it doesn't work out because I want to capture everything on this side to benefit me, you're just going to have to go without. And that's pretty much the model we've seen, not only in Massachusetts, but we've seen this across the nation, down in Washington. So we have to get back to the basics. We're going to be back in the next hour. I'm Tom Hodgson, filling in for Howie Carr. See you after the break.